brought to you by CGTN Europe.
I'm Stephen Cole. Welcome to The Agenda. As the UK's long divorce from the EU continues, food and farming remain as two of the most important sticking points for negotiators on both sides. Today on The Agenda podcast, we look at how Brexit could change attitudes to fishing and farming for Britain and for the rest of Europe. First on the podcast, I talked to Nick von Westenholz, Director of EU Exit and International Trade at Britain's National Farmers Union. He's joined alongside Philip Clark, Executive Director of industry news magazine and website Farmers Weekly. Let's start with you, Nick. Is UK farming strong enough to become self-sufficient?
First of all, there's obviously lots of products and food that we eat in the UK which we don't produce here. So we wouldn't become self-sufficient in those, you know, bananas and mangoes and things like that. But elsewhere, you know, UK farmers produce both for the home market and the export market. So we, for example, produce chicken, both for, in terms of the desire for UK consumers to eat white breast, but we have to export some of that brown meat from the chicken overseas because there's not enough domestic demand. So sort of simple concepts of self-sufficiency and UK farmers just producing for the home market probably don't reflect the realities of the complexity of the food system in modern economies like Britain.
Some polls suggested, Nick, most farmers voted in support of Brexit, something that's often disputed. Regardless of how they voted in 2016, what do they want now?
They were promised an awful lot of things in the run-up to that referendum. You know, they were told they were going to get the same level of farm support payments, if not more. They told there was going to be an easy deal to be done with the EU that would keep free and frictionless trade flowing, and they were told there was going to be amazing new deals done with countries all across the world to increase exports for UK farmers. So there's a high level of expectation there. The concerns now is that some of those promises already look a little bit flaky. So, for example, we're seeing the phasing out of the what's known as a direct payment system of farm support from next year. Not entirely clear what is coming in to replace it and what that will do for farmers. But also, it's very clear now that there are going to be some trade barriers with the EU, which is the largest market for UK farmers. And if we can't reach a deal by the end of this year, those trade barriers are going to be significant, particularly tariffs on food like lamb, for example, going into the EU, which could just make some farm businesses unviable.
Philip, many UK farmers are reported to rely a lot on EU subsidies in order to make a profit. So what will they be looking for to replace that?
The direct payment that comes from Brussels makes up a large amount of farm income, and on some holdings it's the entire profit. So the whole thrust of the government's new policy is around what's called public money for public goods. So the market will provide the income from what farmers have to sell, but other things like maintaining environmental standards or offering public access to farmland, combating climate change, all those kinds of things that there's not actually a market for, are the sort of things that the government's now looking to offer taxpayer support to encourage.
One of the issues, Philip, many farmers are said to have had with Brussels is the amount of red tape. Will Brexit sort that out?
I think that's slightly wishful thinking. You know, our own domestic civil service has a long history of gold-plating EU regulation. So while the intention is there to keep things simple and to make life easier in terms of the bureaucracy, I think in reality that's going to be harder to achieve.
And Nick, coming to you, a report by the NFU's former chief economist, Dr. Sean Ruckard, claims 50% of farms could go out of business in the event of a no-deal Brexit. Is that right?
There is no doubt that no deal would create some big issues for farms, particularly those in some sectors. As I mentioned earlier, sheep farmers export an awful lot of their produce into the EU. Of course, at the moment, that goes completely tariff-free, and it's pretty much frictionless trade as well. So suddenly there's going to be some additional costs at the border, checks, paperwork, that sort of thing, that add delays and costs to trade. But also, if there isn't a deal, those farms could be facing up to 50% additional tariff on their exports, and that is huge.
Farmers are also notorious for being pessimists. You're a farm owner. Are you looking forward to anything good coming out of Brexit?
Well, I think I've always said if this is handled correctly, you know, Brexit can work. If there's probably quite a narrow pathway, but you need to have a good deal with the EU that maintains tariff-free trade and maintains that hugely important market for UK farmers. You need to make sure you've got an immigration system that continues to provide the labour that farmers need, and often that has been supplied from overseas rather than the domestic market. We need a future agricultural support system that supports farmers and helps them become more productive. And we need to be really careful not to be rushing into trade deals with other countries, which throw farming under the bus, but instead, over a period of time, begin to open up some of the export markets for us. So all of that is possible. All of that is within the gift of government policy.
Right.
Whether we get it or not is a different question.
And Philip, we've talked about UK farming. What about European farmers? How are they reacting to Brexit?
The key thing is around trade and what kind of trade deal the UK and Brussels managed to achieve, if any. Should tariffs end up being imposed without a deal, then that's certainly going to hit a lot of farmers in continental Europe as well. I'm thinking particularly, well, Ireland would be massively hit in terms of its beef exports to the UK. But also a lot of pig meat comes this way from producers in Denmark, the Netherlands, Germany as well for processing. If that gets hit by tariffs, then those continental farmers will suffer as well.
And what are your members telling you, Philip, about Brexit and the build-up to it and what's going to happen afterwards? Are they pessimistic or optimistic?
I think that's one of the sort of ironies that when we did our research, we found a majority in favour of Brexit. But then when we asked them what they thought about their prospects, the majority thought that they'd be worse off as a result of it. We never did quite get our head around that. So I think there is a good degree of concern dominated by trade, dominated by standards, dominated by labour availability. So these issues are, you know, yet to see how it works out in reality. But those are real concerns which could yet come back to bite us.
Is farming likely to change post-Brexit, post-pandemic?
Farmers, I think, one way or the other, are going to be have to face the realities of the marketplace maybe more than they have up to now.
What, is that because they've been protected up till now?
Well, they're going to have to rely less on farm support payments, and they're going to be opened up to more competition from imports overseas. Now, you can ask the question about they've been protected up to now, but some would argue rightly, because you have genuine concerns around food security. The pandemic has really brought that to the fore, the need to at least have some degree of ability and capacity to produce your own food. There will be farms that survive, and there will be farms that thrive. But will it be the same sort of farming that we're used to, and indeed maybe the same sort of the sort of farming that the public wants and expects? I think there's going to be a question mark over that.
When the coronavirus pandemic spread through Europe, travel restrictions combined with stockpiling meant food supply chains couldn't keep up. And the British Retail Consortium has been warning a, quote, disorderly Brexit could present even greater challenges. To explain what those might be, I'm joined by Marcel van der Vliet, president of Selca, which represents more than 30,000 European companies in agri-food trade. Marcel, you've been talking to the EU's chief negotiator, Michel Barnier. What are your main concerns?
Well, the main concern for the food and agri trade chain is the lack of clarity. It's the many unknowns that we have to face still. Mr. Barnier has been very helpful. He's been communicating to the food and agri trade chain along the process. Things will change, but what we most need is predictability and clarity on procedures, on customs clearance, on how to prevent disorder.
Now, when you talk about clarity and procedures, can you give me a bit more detail?
Yes. Well, it really comes down to the practicalities. When food and agri-produce is exported or imported crossing borders, up till now it was a seamless process. So operators could, for example, source from the UK and then you could sell it across the whole of the European Union. Well, that will change. And the question for us is now, what's the additional paperwork? What will it look like?
Oh, well, that's fair enough. This is the bureaucracy behind the change. But I'm wondering whether you're also worried that perhaps a no-deal Brexit could destabilise the food chain or the food supply chain.
Absolutely. If hard Brexit will materialise, then we'll be confronted with massive import duties and tariffs. And this has been a shared concern, both on the UK side, also the UK farmers and trade community and food and drink industry, as ours, from our side. We all would like to prevent that scenario because...
What's stopping you from agreeing that? If you want it and the UK wants it, that should be agreed quite easily, shouldn't it?
Well, you would think so. Huh? We talk about food and agri-produce. It's got to do with food security, with full supply shelves, good consumer choice. But still, we're food and agri is part of the bigger political game and the big political picture. Huh? There's many sectoral interests, and we are part of the total negotiation. So let's hope, realism will prevail in the end.
Well, it should do. I mean, the UK is a key export market for France, Ireland, and the Netherlands. Does that give the UK the edge in negotiations?
I think it works both ways. We need the UK market as much as the UK needs us for their sourcing and for us as a market to sell to. So the UK is by far one of the largest trading partners. It will become our closest and one of the largest trading partners and third country markets as from the 1st of January. So for us, it's all about international cooperation. I know it's not so much in fashion these days, but to working together, that's what we plead for.
I absolutely agree. The UK could, of course, in theory, shop around for a better deal. Would it be more advantageous to look for a better deal, or is that a negotiating ploy?
Well, look, there's of course competitors standing ready to serve the UK market. But the thing is, under what conditions? What quality are you going to import? Under which standards? And this is also a heavy debate in the UK itself.
What would a future EU-UK trading relationship look like post-Brexit?
Well, we hope it will be as comprehensive as possible. So tariff-free, quota-free. Of course, a certain random number of tests will have to be done. We talk about food quality. That needs to be checked. But let's make it as easy as possible. You know, traders like to trade. They want to deliver goods. They want to go from one deal to the next. And in general, I can tell you, they don't like to fill in papers. They don't like to queue. Business needs to flow. That's our motto.
And that brings us to the end of another edition of The Agenda. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher and Spotify. You can also find us on CGTN Europe Facebook, Twitter, Instagram and YouTube.
most interesting questions.
Are there other living beings beyond Earth?
Will man or machine be in charge?
Great question.
Always have more than one answer.
Well, hold on, let me just draw up a list.
And always come from more than one person.
That's where the credibility lies.
The concept of having a machinery which is alive and evolving didn't wait for us.
The end of inequality of incomes and wealth around the world, can you imagine how difficult that is at the moment to achieve?
Every episode, Stephen Cole, Murray Beveridge, and some of the brightest minds out there shed light on the answers to some of the most intriguing questions.
There are two ways of looking at this.
Machines can't really discriminate between civilian and military targets.
The Answers Project.
Maybe we need to just look at this in a bit more detail.
Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.
The Answers Project, a new podcast from CGTN Europe.